Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life. Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. It is my day. It is St. Patrick's Day. I got my green lantern on. We got to be as green as we possibly can. Today, we're doing something else, though, that's very near and dear to my heart, and that is collecting. It is not hoarding. It is not gathering. It is collecting. This is something I have been passionate about for a long time. If some of you that know me, I collected ex-wives. I've collected children, collecting grandchildren now, but I have other collections. So with us today, Doug, I should have asked you this before. Is it Dreyer?
Dreyer.
We have Doug Dreyer of the Collection Connection. Now, I kept saying you grew up in a museum. Did I misunderstand that, or did Dad own a museum? What was the museum piece?
So, you know, I grew up in a family of collectors. And then in about 2000 or so, I moved back to California, 2003, actually, and really took some of our collections and started putting them out on display. We had an office building next to our house that we owned and didn't have any tenants. So we just started putting stuff out there, and it turned into a pretty extensive museum, a pop culture, a Smithsonian of the West. It had books, sports memorabilia, gems, minerals, fossils, Hollywood entertainment. And we called it the Collection, but it was really, in essence, a 20,000 square foot museum. It wasn't open to the public, which really what makes a museum. But it was our own private entity. And I ran that for 15 years until we just got too many events, too many people coming through and wanted a break. So it wasn't that I was raised in a museum, but I was raised as a collector. And then through that, the collecting took us into having our own collection that was often called a museum.
God. So did you have stickers? Because we have our new thing. And this is this is one of our friends from the Talking Beards. This is look at his beard.
I like that. I'm not there yet. You're way ahead of me.
Yeah, you got to get a full beard. So started this one, and I had to ask this if you had any sticker collections, because we have our new thing. I'm calling it a sticker and a cause.
Yep.
So we got I keep doing this. The camera's backwards. So we have Cody's already on it. We love Cody. Cody's out there. Cody has her own. She collects trance dances. She has her own thing called the Trance Dance. I tell everyone, go check out Cody and her Trance Dance, and that is trademarked. And she makes it, try to tell me, and she has Woke Ass Dating. It's like an app for like dating called Woke Ass Dating. Her and another buddy of mine, Tim. But on the right back here, and look, we were talking about Baltimore earlier. Look right there in the middle.
Look at that. Oh my goodness.
The gentleman next week is in Cleveland. I can't wait for this conversation.
So I don't have stickers yet, but working on it. I have a hat. I'll send you a hat at some point.
We'll get that going.
You know, it's funny. Growing up, I collected stickers. And really now with my kids, when we travel, if we are in Sedona, they buy the sticker and it goes on their water bottle that they travel with. And it really is collecting that sticker connects them to Sedona or Flagstaff or Seattle, wherever we are, there's usually those vinyl type stickers, and they're really collecting memories, right?
And some of the stickers that are out there, we got another listener, Tyler Hill. Tyler, like, he designed this one for the Talking Beards.
It's gorgeous.
But so, sticker and a cause, I want to throw this out here before we get too far into it. If you got something that you're passionate about, something you care about, if you hit me up, I'll give you an address. You send me your sticker. We'll talk about it for a moment, and I'll throw it up here on the clock. It's a free, you know, free little publicity for anybody. Sticker and a cause.
We'll make it happen. I'm hoping to come up with some sort of like low level scholarship to start with, that I can run contests so I can find out what kind of collections people have in their for their children. What, you know, how are they raising their kids to be collectors? Because I think collecting is such an important skill to nurture.
Well, it's organized. It's an organizational skill.
It's organizational skills. It's interpersonal skills. It's sorting skills. It's business skills. It's so many things. And you know what you'd said before, it's not just accumulation or gathering. It's a collection. You're organizing something that interests you. And so through that, you are creating this passion, this direction. It's not just, I've got this, I've got that, we're going to put it together. A collection isn't organized sometimes, but it's a mindset of I'm trying to do something that interests me and I'm going to gather it for whatever reason.
Yeah. Now, I know what my first, and I had to think about this as we were coming out. And Cody, if you do the Soul Sprout sticker, because that's her thing, Soul Sprout, I want it to look like a ghost coming out of a flower. That's, there you go. There's your idea. Or like a wisp of something. That's my idea. You don't even got to trademark it. So I was trying to figure out what my first collection was, because I know what my first full collection was, which was the John Burns, Superman, Man of Steel, which is what all the movies are all based on, all that stuff, where it's not Lois Lane, it's Lana Lang. All that's based on the John Byrne run, which is amazing, which is hard left turn for a moment. I met John Byrne's brother-in-law and sister-in-law purely by accident because their last name was Koontz.
Sure.
And when I said to the guy, jokingly, I went, oh, any relation to Dean R? Because I was a big Dean R. Koontz reader.
Of course.
I said, any relation? The guy goes, no, but John Byrne's is my brother-in-law. And I went, huh?
That's better.
And he was, and they just happened to be on the train to Vermont, and I met him that way and had a whole conversation. It was the wildest thing. This was so cool. But now you also, like, so back to what I was saying here, like my first other collection, because I'm 44. How old are you, Doug? Are you willing
47.
To say? So 47. We're in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Garbage Pail Kids.
Of course. Of course.
I remember having like, and my old man, we owned a liquor store at the time. He didn't want to buy them. Like, I'm like, Dad, we all love these. And he finally went out and he bought them and we had them. What for you was like the first thing that you can remember, like either seeing, because you said your dad was a big collector.
My dad was a collector. And really, my collecting story begins with my dad. It was me and my dad going to the baseball card store and buying 50-cent packs of Tops or Fleer, Tops mostly at the time. And opening up those packs Saturday morning, sitting there at his desk, and, you know, we'd have a box, and there'd be 36 packs, and he'd take 18, and I would take 18, and we'd have pack wars. And, like,
now, okay, what was that? Gets,
a pack war for us would be, okay, we're going to open a pack. Whoever's player has the most home runs gets a bonus or something. We'd usually buy an extra pack or two of something, or best card from the pack, most home runs, most, you know, wins in a season, stolen bases, just something that made you look at the back of the card and made you think about, okay, it's not just now when you see people opening packs, they're going through for the inserts.
Right. Where's the piece of a baseball bat or piece of a jersey?
I was raised really to look at the back of the card and find out, you know, okay, who was the most, you know, what's the on-base percentage of Wally Joyner or Doug DeCinces or whomever, Rod Carew. I was just raised like that. So for me, it was really that memory of buying packs with my dad and just sorting them. I would end up opening all the packs because his joy, his peace was sorting. My dad was a very analytical person, and organization was his calming thing. So we would get these packs and he would first sort them, get big stacks, he'd into hundreds and then into tens and then into numerical order. And that was his happy place. We talked earlier, he was the CEO of a company and by later on at Ryland in Baltimore, the cards were his happy place for it. So he would like be able to decompress. He would be able to just sort of shut out all the other things that were happening in the world. And I grew up being a part of that. And so for me, the collecting thing was, a moment of peace, of calm, of pleasure, just real enjoyment. And I have the, such great memories of keeping that up through when he passed 2 years ago.
So that was, and that was your thing with your dad.
Yeah.
See, that's all. See, for me, my dad, mine passed away in 2017.
Okay.
And for my dad, it was, and this is such an odd thing that him and I did, was when people would pass away, like old celebrities.
Sure.
We would call each other. Hey, did you hear that such and such from Gunsmoke passed away? And half the time I'm like, I don't know who this person is. So I would have to figure out who these people were. And then another one would come up and be like, Dad, did you know that blah, blah, blah? Oh, yeah, I remember watching them, blah, blah, blah. That was my dad. He had one collection. And this was kind of a, you know, I was going to save this for later, but maybe I'll bring it up now because you're bringing up dads. Did you ever have to get rid of a collection that you wish you still had today? Anybody, and those of you that are listening, if you have a collection, you can think of a collection that you had to get rid of. Maybe you were financially strapped at the time and you knew like, hey, I got this thing that's going to get me over the hump. But now you look back that you're more stable. Yeah.
You know,
anything like that?
We've been lucky in that when we've sold collections, we've really done it on our terms. And let's go back to that later because there is advice there. We had built this amazing collection and we actually decided it was just time to let it go. We did it in parts. So like we let the sports go first. Then we sold the entertainment material and we refocused. And that refocusing really kept us from... I wish we hadn't have done that because instead of like looking at something and going, but now I'm going after a first edition of X. Now I will say at one point we were doing a bit of investing in documents, buying and selling, and we had bought a group of items. And one of the items was a Howard Carter drawn cartouche from when he discovered Tutankhamun's tomb in 1923.
Really?
Gorgeous. And one of my favorite pieces. It was colorful. It was dated. It was to a reporter. And we had sort of already said that was going to go to another person. And I was like, boy, if I had the chance, I would have bought that and kept it in my personal collection. So a few years later, I get a phone call. We're still doing this. Guy says, hey, I need to sell 20 documents or so. We buy the lot. And one of them was the Howard Carter cartouche that we had sold to a different person a few years before. And so when we got it a second time, I did buy it and I kept it in my collection and saved a lot of money for some random reason. We were lucky. We did it on our terms. We had this building where we were hosting events and doing private tours. And we got to a point where we were doing too many events, too many people wanting tours on weekends and weeknights. And when I started, I had no children. And by 2012, I had three. And so my weekend...
Only three? What's wrong with you?
Well, I wanted to sleep a little bit more. By 2015 or so, we just really thought we wanted our weekends back. Or we wanted our time back. I've married a woman from Denmark, so we wanted to do more traveling back over to Europe.
Interesting.
And my dad was retired and really just got tired of other people wanting something because invariably I give you a tour and then you say, hey, my dad's coming into town. Can he get a tour? It's Sunday in the, you know,
my buddy's coming by.
It's that plus one. And this was a purely private enterprise. It wasn't a foundation. It wasn't a not-for-profit. It was just our personal thing. And we got tired of too many events, you know, 50, 60 events a year that were good-sized charity, corporate, college-related. And we just decided it was time to sort of calm down and refocus. So we did it on our terms. And I think that made a big difference because it allowed us to refocus. It allowed us to say, hey, I'm not going to do baseball cards anymore, but I'm going to refocus on books or gems and minerals. And we were able to really tone that down. When my father was ill, passed away 2018, so not long after you, we had by that time mostly shut things down. I took a year off of collecting after that because a lot of the collecting joy I had was doing it with my dad,
running this industry with my dad.
So I wouldn't say there was anything we ever really had to sell. We were fortunate. We were blessed. We did it all on our terms. But I would say the things I miss most are the memories and the collecting that I did with my dad and my mom and my wife. I mean, little things like that. And I think that really goes to show that collecting is really more than accumulating stuff. It was collecting the memories and collecting the moments. And when I think people collect because they want to be a part of something, right? I mean, you were a military guy. Yep. And you know, when you are in a group of other people who are in the military, you've sort of found your tribe. You have the same language. You have that shared experiences, and that bonds you, right? Absolutely. Collecting is the same thing. It's being around people who have similar interests, similar goals, and you feel like you found your tribe. And so I think there's something really there that you're connecting to a memory, a place, a time, a group, something that affected you. For me, it was my family. I grew up in Anaheim, so it's the Angels. I grew up the Rams. I have here, a Johnny Hecker Rams jersey that I just gotten signed. Those things make a difference. And when I look at those, I remember those moments. And so I miss those more than I miss the actual items themselves.
See, it's funny you keep using that term tribe for collecting. So my best friend Ken and I, every year we do our pilgrimage to NYCC. And for those of you that don't know what that is, that's New York City Comic Con. Yep. We take the train down. We stay in the same hotel. It's changed names now. It used to be called Bourbon Street or something like that. It's got a new name, but it's basically the same place. It's right in Hell's Kitchen. Buy all the food and drink you could ever want. We go over to the Javits together, and we go from Albany down there, Albany, New York to down there, and we still run into people that we know from Albany.
Yeah.
We see people. I got him having a brain fart right now. I do this at every show. There's a gentleman that I met, no shitter. My son, who's 17, was 9. We were standing waiting on the shuttle bus before I ever started working on the trains, waiting on the shuttle bus to take us back to the train station to come home to Albany. And the gentleman standing next to me, and we get to chitty chatting a little bit. Didn't think much of it. He was a nice guy. We were talking about art, and I always have a sketchbook because that's one of the things I collect when I go to my shows is I get original sketches from artists.
I do the same thing. I'm with you.
And it amazed.
Unbelievable.
I have a baseball card comic book connection that I wonder if you know. We'll talk about here in a minute. So the guy standing next to me, I swear to you, almost 5-6 years later, maybe even longer than that, I'm on Facebook and I get a message. Hey, it's such and such. You met me at Comic-Con in New York City. I was standing there. Hey, man, how you been? Didn't know him from Adam at that point. We still talk. You know, we're casual Facebook kind of friends, but it's one of those kind of things. Like, I absolutely know. And then I have a friend, Cliff. Cliff and I would have never met each other. We would have never been in the same circles, anything, if it wasn't for collecting.
Yeah,
and that passion. So I get it completely. And it's funny, and I'm going to talk about this, because you've collected things from around the world.
Yeah.
And Jeanette is my favorite English woman. She keeps me honest on all of my Doctor Who.
Of course.
She keeps me honest on her and I. One day, we'll have to see if she knows Red Dwarf. I love Red Dwarf from over there. That's one of my favorite shows. I know you got somebody hiding out around there. I heard.
No, hey, Trevor.
Come here, Trevor.
That script that's over there by the door. I think that'd be interesting to see. It's that 1963 one. Sorry, you mentioned England, so I thought that might be something.
But she brings up a very interesting thing. So Tintin and Asterix. I don't know what Asterix is at all.
Yeah, I do. I'm already European. I know that.
So I know Tintin, but that's an example of things that here, and I remember this from Magic cards. So for a little bit of time, I collected Magic the Gathering cards.
MTG, I'm with you.
And it was interesting how here in the States, if you had a card, a foreign language card in the mid-90s, which today you wouldn't think nothing of it. If I want a foreign language card, I'll go online, I'll order it, it'll be here, I'll get a whole damn box of them. It won't mean anything.
Yeah.
But in the mid-90s, that card that might be in Spanish or French or Italian was like, it was
big
like
time. Absolutely.
And really, today we would think nothing of it. Now, you said you had a script over there.
I do. So you had mentioned like Doctor Who. This is a 1963 serial script for Doctor Who, episode 10, serial B, the episode 6, I'm sorry, The Ordeal. And so this was a gift from my father. I collect Doctor Who, a lot of original art and stuff like that. And this was something that he had bought for me that I just kept. And anything that was like a gift at one of the collections, we kept because that was personal. We've gotten some wonderful gifts from wonderful people. And that's ours. That was not ever going to be sold. And so that's a pretty
piece.
Cool item. I'm a Doctor Who fan, a Whovian, whatever you want to call us.
You'll have to look through my Facebook and look up Matthew Dow Smith.
Okay.
So Matt is about 6'7". Amazing guy. Wonderful. I love Matt. He just recently moved. I say recently. It's been a few years. He moved back. He moved to D.C. when he met his wife. They live in D.C. He doesn't hold the record currently, but at one point in time, he drew more Doctor Who comics than anyone in the history of the world. And what was great about it was he was drawing Doctor Who when Matt Smith was Doctor Who. So Matthew Dow Smith was drawing Matthew Smith.
Matt Smith. That's pretty cool. I've got some original artwork of Doctor Who somewhere. I think it's over there. A friend of mine is a guy named Lee Cosey. He's an artist, does a lot of work for Lucasfilm. And he does some artwork for me. That's a different guy. They're the framed pieces. But
no, boy, over there. Get that one.
Yeah. But, I mean, to go back to, like, you met your friends through there, I'm thinking about what collecting has done for me. My best friends came through collecting. I was at a card show in 2003-ish. Walked up with my dad to a guy sitting at a table. And, you know, he's in my wedding. And he met his wife at my wedding. And so now we're sitting through this amazing thing where collecting brought me my best friends. My friends from San Diego. I have a friend named Lee who's an artist. I work for Lucasfilm. And he does amazing work. And I met him. He was an artist at a show. And we just started talking and became really good friends. And now we hang out outside of Comic-Cons and so forth. Collecting brings friends. It brings my job. I work with museums now on collecting and exhibit design. And I think that all goes back to that morning, Saturday mornings doing baseball cards with my dad.
Oh, that's so cool. Now, this friend of yours, this isn't Jim Lee, is it?
No, it's not Jim.
Okay, I'm just double checking. You're like, my friend Lee, and you're just kind of brushing through this. Like, my friend Lee, no big deal.
Lee Cosey, that's right. I do have a Jim Lee piece there that I met through another friend. He was doing a Lego thing, and he did a sketch for me on that. And those are things you do because you're collecting and you meet people. And one thing leads to another, and it's just this sort of random – who the hell knows?
No, I get it. I get it. I'm just kind of noticing something that I think we do as collectors that we don't realize we do is we collect meetings with people.
Absolutely. That's very true.
So like you're talking about this. So I've met Greg Capullo multiple times. Well, he's from Schenectady right here by me.
Yep.
And I met him the first time. It was actually – he was in a middle school in Schenectady telling the story of how he got into being an artist and how his mother was a drunk and she treated him like a tetherball. And Jim Shooter, I think it was Jim Shooter. Don't quote me on that part, folks. You might have to go back and double check that it was Jim Shooter. And all my Marvel people know who Jim Shooter was. He was kind of like the anti-Stan Lee. That's the only way I can kind of just explain him. Somebody will jump on and tell me I was wrong, but I don't care. That's my opinion. And it's my show, and I get to do that. He was telling a story where, and I don't remember who it was, but how they told him, your art sucks, you suck, get out, and like fired him. And he was like, I went home and I was like, I'll show you. And he just became this amazing artist and did these things. But I just noticed that when you were saying it, like we collect meetings also. That's our way of kind of meeting these people and having these conversations is through that. I didn't even realize that. Look at that.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's, you never know where it's going to go, right?
Larry Hama. The Podfather said it was Larry Hama. I put all the faith in him. the Podfather, Herb there, DW, he runs our network. We're on the Earplug Network. So this will go out and be on there. And I would say on a scale of 1 to 10 with comics, I'm a pretty solid 6 or 7.
Yep.
Herb's a solid 8 to 9. Like he's got his shit down pat. So if he says it was Larry Hama, it was Larry Hama. But he still doesn't like Green Lantern, so I don't care about it.
Yeah, hey, I was a Marvel guy. I grew up collecting Thor and Spider-Man, Punisher, you know, Spider-Man 129. Those were my things. But I loved that stuff. And I like you, I remember going to Comic Cons early on and going back then, you could just walk up to Jim Lee and you could walk up to all these guys, Ron Lim. I remember, I think I have a ton of work from Ron Lim because I could just walk up to him in the late 90s, early 2000s. And now it's like there's lines and it's, you know, the prices on. So Neil Adams is another great example. I mean, Neil Adams is, of course, legendary artist, and he's got people, you know, lining up to talk to him, and it's just been absurd what's been going on.
Wonder if see if my bride's listening. She's my wife always listens. If she is listening and she comes down, I have a seat, and this is something I'd love to get your opinion on. I have a CGC of Green Lantern, Green Arrow. My ward is a junkie,
Phenomenal cover.
For those who don't know it, it was during the heroin in the 70s. The, you know, New York City was just not – New York City wasn't this fun-loving place that we all think of today. But I actually have a gold CGC signed Neil Adams verified of that. And it's one of those ones that – where you talk about your dad. We had somebody in the comic book collecting world a guy named Dave Music. I don't know if you ever heard the name. Mm-hmm. Going around, Dave created comic book frames.
Sure.
And he created this thing where you could take your book and drop a hard sleeve into it.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And hang it on the wall. And he would send you custom ones with, if you wanted Walking Dead, this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
And once in a while, if he needed a couple of bucks or his collection was getting too big, he would sell something off. Well, I bought that off of him.
Mm.
And to this day, I couldn't tell you. Dave passed away about 2 years ago. It popped up on Facebook. Hey, we miss you, Dave. Dave passed away. I've searched it 100 times. No one has ever said what was going on, what happened to the guy. But it's, you know, collecting. Again, there's a guy who there is no reason but collecting for us to meet.
Yep.
Now, let's see if you – now, let's go back because I wanted to bring this up. Do you know the baseball card and comic book connection from the 90s?
Okay. There's probably a bunch.
There's a big one.
Baseball card, comic connection from the
90s. And I'll even go comic, baseball card, comic book. And I don't remember, but I want to say there was even a cartoon.
Okay. Bo Jackson comes to mind. I'm thinking you got me on that one. What do you got?
Super Pro.
Super Pro. Okay.
Do you remember Super Pro?
So, wow, you're really digging into the bottom of the barrel stuff there, aren't you?
But he's a big one for the Albany area because Joe Sinnott, who just passed away.
Yes. Big name. Yeah.
Joe was from the Albany area. And he, for those who don't know, Joe was the oldest living employee of Marvel Comics.
Yep.
I think it was like 67 years, something along those lines. And he, Super Pro was his character. And and he actually, for those of you, he was Jack Kirby's inker. If you know what an inker is, Jack Kirby would draw it. And then he would go behind and do all the ink work for Jack Kirby. So this is a guy, we're not talking some schlub here.
No, not at all. No, and, big name.
And I have in my collection a Joe Sinnott drawn Cookie Monster.
I like that.
My the youngest stepdaughter liked Cookie Monster, so I had a sketchbook done, and we got Joe Sinnott. I handed it to him, and he was like, "Okay," and he was like, "I've in all my years, I've never drawn Cookie Monster." So Joe Sinnott drew Cookie Monster. We have him and what the heck's his name? God, I can't think of his name right now. He destroyed. He always did the things. Whatever his name was, destroys Marvel, and I can't think of his name right now. But I love collecting. I see this is. Yeah. This is my world. Like I got, see, I didn't get into the cards, but for a, like that much, like right there. And it was the, it was probably right around 91.
Sure. So you're talking Fleer, Donruss, the banana set from 92.
Well, it was whatever set that Super Pro came out of.
Okay. That was Upper Deck maybe.
No, it wasn't. Cause Upper Deck always had the hologram.
Pro set.
Right. Short-lived as it was. Because they aren't around anymore, are they?
Yeah. No.
And they had a lot of neat cards. I do remember having tops and cards that now I look back and it didn't dawn on me, but like I had the Eric Dickerson 2000 rushing yard card.
Sure. Yep.
It didn't mean nothing to me. The only card that really matters, do you know there's only one card that matters in the city of Baltimore though, right?
Is it the Billy Ripken?
Yes. Billy Ripken FU back card.
Yeah,
that was legendary as a kid. For those who don't know, Billy Ripken was the Billy Ripken's batting average might have been 2.
Yeah.
But his fielding average was like a .999. Yeah. That dude, you weren't getting past him, and he had to live up to Big Brother Cal's image and then had to live up to his father Cal Sr.'s image, who was – Cal Sr. was harder than woodpecker lips. And so there's this card with Billy standing there, and they took a picture, and the bottom of his bat says, fuck you, at the bottom of it.
Yeah, the fuck face card.
I love it. And
that's a big one. I mean, that's one of those cards that sort of achieved notoriety, fame beyond the baseball card world. And you know, that's a trophy card, really. It's like people who don't even have cards – they go, oh, yeah, the Billy Ripken card. I have a great collecting story. When I was in Baltimore, my mother was doing some work with a group called Baltimore Reads, and part of that group was Tom Matty. Remember Tom Matty?
The name sounds familiar.
He was a football player. Okay. And one day we're at a golf event or something with him, and I said, hey, Tom, you know, the next time you see Johnny U, will you have him sign this football for me? And he goes, yeah, sure. Just come on in the back and we'll just go ask him right now. So he leads me around the back of the golf course. We're in the little private area and Johnny Unitas is sitting there. He's like, hey, Johnny, sign this for my friend Doug. And Johnny's like, all right, great. Signs a football to me. And then Tom Matty says, I'm going to lower the value of this football. And then he signed it too.
What?
Yeah.
You met Johnny U?
I met Johnny U. I was at the games. Cal Ripken tied and broke his record. I had my ticket.
Then we were at the game together.
Well. Yeah.
So we were at the game together then.
Yeah. Because, so if you remember.
Yeah. It was a Yankees game.
Byron Holmes was my dad. They were a big sponsor. They used to have a sign right by the right on the scorecard. It was like SK Hot Dogs on one side and Ryland Holmes on the other. Yeah. So there's that great image of Cal Ripken waving from behind, and it has the Ryland sign back there. So we spent a lot of time going to those games.
So that's a lost memorabilia for me. So my dad and I went to that game. It was it was a Yankees game. And I remember, so my dad, I've told the story 100 times. I'm the shortest person on my father's side of the family, whether male or female, and I'm 5'8". Even the women are taller than me. They're 5'10". There's one that's 6'2". Everybody's taller than me. But my dad was a thin man, but he had big, long hands. And he clapped. He would clap like this. Like this popping sound. Trap in the air, this popping sound. Who knows what that just sounded like in somebody's car. For everybody in their car listening to this, hey, Siri. But there was this woman who was like a Yankees fan the whole game. And she's like annoying my father, cheering for the Yankees. And then the O's ended up winning that game. And as the O's were coming back in that game, the old man kept popping that clap, getting closer and closer to this woman's head. And I'm looking at my dad going, oh God, we're going to fight somebody in Camden Yards today because my father's half in the bag and clapping in somebody's face. Oh no. But I got back. I was in the Marine Corps at the time.
Yeah.
So I get all the way back to North Carolina and my dad goes, where's your ticket stub? I don't know, Dad. What do you mean? He goes, you got to find your ticket stub. I'm like, why? What's going on? He goes, Cal didn't play today.
Yeah.
I looked everywhere. Couldn't find it.
Yeah.
But I was there. I do know I was there.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. So to go back into the baseball world, I was born May 14th, 1973. Nolan Ryan, as an Angel, threw his first no-hitter May 15th, 1973. And my dad remembers holding me in the hospital listening to that game. And so years and years and years later, you know, it's probably 15 years ago, Dick Enberg sells his collection. Dick Enberg was the announcer for the Angels at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We bought this, and this is Dick Enberg's scorecard from Nolan Ryan's first no-hitter.
Oh, that's so cool.
Dated May 15th, 1973. You know, no hit. Right there, you can kind of see no hit. I'd try backwards, but right there. It's got all his notes from the game. And I thought that was pretty dang cool. You know, you got two Hall of Famers on one thing. Dick Enberg, of course, in the Hall of Fame as an announcer. Nolan Ryan, it's a pitcher. And that was something that had real connection because it was a memory of my dad's. I don't remember that, obviously.
Right.
But he held me and listened to that game on the radio in the hospital. And so that's a pretty powerful thing. And so when I look at that, it's beyond being a cool item. It really is. But it's a very personal thing for me, right, as a memory to my mom and my dad and being in the hospital there. So my mom is a huge part of our collecting as well. My dad and I, you follow baseball. You remember the 1988 World Series, right? Kirk Gibson hits the home run.
Yep.
So 2003, Kirk Gibson puts that stuff up for auction. And we were going to bid on it. We wanted to keep it all together because it was 5-6 different lots. We wanted to buy it, keep it in California. We were worried it was going to go a piece to New York and a piece to LA. And so we said, we're going to go after that. So it's November 13th, the day before my son's third birthday, and we're at Disneyland, California. And we're at dinner, and my dad and I are like texting under the table, and I'm checking the auction that's going on. My mom's like, what the hell are you doing? And we're like, no, there's this Gibson thing. And she goes, that's the guy that did this after he hit the home run. And we're like, yeah, it's a big deal. And she's like, just bid on it and win it and get it over with. So we do. And it's not cheap.
Oh, but I
remember like 3 a.m, I'm lying on a bed at Disneyland Hotel in Anaheim, California, bidding on it and waiting for the auction to close. And so now I have this memory of my mom, like, just get it over with and bid. And it being my son's birthday, and I'm at Disneyland that day fielding calls from the press and what's going on. Can we talk? And all those things combine to create this amazing memory. The Gibson stuff, I mean, it's one of the great moments in sports history. And if you're in Southern California, It is the number one California, well, probably not for Oakland, but it's the number one Southern California for a moment, right? I mean, it's that great, I don't believe what I just saw, or Vin Scully, it's in a year that's been so improbable, the impossible has happened. I mean, those are moments in time. And I think about that, but I also think of me and my mom and my dad at dinner trying to like bid under the table at the auction. And she has always been so supportive of my father's collecting, of my collecting. And that's so powerful. It's profound to find someone who is so supportive of you in something like that. Now, my mom usually made out pretty well when we felt guilty about buying stuff and she'd get other things. But she always was so supportive of what we did and what we found and what we got joy out of. She was always like, do it. You're going to love it. You're going to hate yourself if you don't do it. That's a really powerful way of supporting someone.
That's just awesome.
To understand, right? Just to understand what someone's doing, what their passion and their joy is, and to just be like, go for it. I'm with you. Whatever you can do, I want to do.
That's awesome. Did she have a collecting thing, or was it more she was just kind of hanging out
my
with you guys?
My mom does collect things. In fact, we have a bar. You'd like it here at my office. We have a bar, and at the end of the bar, my mom collects sunshines, like sunbursts.
Okay.
And she collects wine glasses. And she has probably 3,200 different types of wine glasses.
What's amazing about that
is that, you know, some are really fancy and some are just normal, but most of them have been gifts. And my mom can tell you, hey, I know that. That's when my friend Jean went to Paris and found that glass and brought it back. And my mom loved it because that meant somewhere around the world or at some point you thought of her. And like something made you think of her and you wanted to be a part of that. That's really powerful and profound.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah. So she collects wine glasses. And when we would do events here, rather than, you know, having a wine glass with a little tag on it, you would have a one-of-a-kind wine glass.
Oh, that's a neat idea. So they went from her collection.
They went from her collection. And we lost a few here and there, you know, people drinking. That's what they do. But it was really unique. And if we do this again, I'll have some examples that I can show you because they're really cool. But my mom, for her, she loves that. And she loves even more the fact that each one has a memory. Right?
Each
glass in that collection is, oh, we bought that when we were in Ojai, or we were in New York and it was snowing and we walked past this little tiny craft store and walked in and they had that wine glass of a lion. And so she bought it. And much like collecting postcards or pens from hotels or whatever, a collecting thing really is about the how and the when, right?
Right, right.
It's that moment of the journey. We always say it's the journey rather than the end. And it's true. I mean, we think about what we've done through all this. You think about collecting comic art.
Oh, I love it.
And it's when you've met these people. I remember once being at a hotel in Anaheim, California, and being in an elevator with Neil Adams with a bunch of people at Disneyland who had no idea who he was. And I just thought, I know who you are, Neil. Thanks for all the great work. And he smiled and, you know, said hi to my son. That's really cool. And you can't get that experience just randomly. It sort of just, you kind of have to push those things forward, right?
Absolutely. See, Neil Adams is an interesting one when you bring him up. I feel like meeting him and like really having a conversation with him, he'd be a dick.
Not true at all.
He gives, like, have you ever heard him talk about getting, the Superman, Schuster and,
Simon?
Was it Simon and Schuster, Superman? Yeah.
Yeah.
And how he got them their money and how he went through that process and he fought for them. And if you listen to it, it's a super powerful story. And folks, you want to hear a story of how a guy said to the system, you can go pound sand. Listen to Neil Adams. I'm giving myself chills talk about it. listen to Neil Adams talk about going up against this monster DC and going, not only do you need to go ahead and pay these guys and pay them properly, I'm going to take you to the court of public opinion, and that's where you're going to lose at.
Yeah.
And then he turned around and told them all, and by the way, everybody's artwork they've ever done, it belongs to them, not to you. You just get to publish it, but they get to keep the original art. Yeah. But he does it in this way where you're like, you're kind of a dick, ain't you, man? Like if I owed you a dollar.
Is I know when I see him working at shows and sitting at his booth, he always has time to talk to people, especially children. He's happy to talk. Now he doesn't do sketches as much anymore for free as he, but I mean, now it's such a business. People get that and they sell them so quickly, but I've never found him to not talk to someone unless he's already involved doing a podcast or an interview, and especially good with kids. That's my experience. I've never had to sit and listen to a lecture. I've watched some YouTube videos where he's talking about the science or the art of writing and drawing, which I have no skill at whatsoever. I peaked
you and me
as
both.
An artist at age four. I mean, that was the height of my artist. But I've enjoyed watching him be around people. And I think from what I've seen, which is anecdotal, that he's good at just having conversations. He likes talking about, hey, your favorite character is Green Lantern, you know, blah, 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 blah. I can understand that vibe, I guess, if you see him doing some stuff but I don't have that same.
Well, you have a personal experiences with him.
Yeah. I will say one of my favorite moments meeting a what I would say is a legend is I'm a big Thor fan. And so you mentioned Kirby, and of course Kirby is one of the greats. I'm a Simonson guy. Walt Simonson is the ideal Thor. And I was at a comic show, and I once waited like 2 hours in line to get him to sign a book, and he drew a picture on a shirt for me. And then the next day I'm walking past the booth and he's just sitting there at a table. And I had a book with me, an omnibus of Simonson. And we just started talking, and he drew in my book and he explained his signature. It's the Simonson with the big loop and a thing. He goes, oh, it's a dinosaur. I love drawing dinosaurs. So his Simonson signature is a dinosaur. And
I never knew that.
If you look at it now, they'll go, oh yeah, that makes total sense. It looks like a brontosaurus. I would have never learned that, except for one day I'm walking and he's sitting there and was friendly and just started talking. And I didn't have to wait 2 hours. We had like 15 minutes or so. And like, I treasure that time, because it's like you're meeting a legend, and Simonson is, and it'd be like Stan Lee or Sennett. Oh, I mean, those guys who have been and seen and done everything. It's pretty amazing.
I love hearing stories of like different people that people have met, and Tim finally showed up. Nice of you to show up, Tim. Been a while. Tim is gonna lose his title to Jeanette as number one fan. I'm just gonna go ahead and put that out there. That he's going to lose that title if he don't start tightening his game up. he's going to talk shit any moment. Collecting is such a – I don't even know how to – I know people – I have friends. Two of them I can think of in particular that will not own and do not own anything used.
Sure.
And it doesn't register in my head. I'm like, Don't you collect anything? You know, don't you have anything like this? And no, I don't. No, don't need that stuff. Don't want that clutter. Jeanette says she's polishing her top fan badge. they just don't. What do you say to people that are so like, I don't want to say anti-collecting, but almost look at stuff like that and go, why would you hold on to that? Why would you want that?
Yeah. You know, I once met a gentleman who was a producer, film guy, documentaries, and he was not a fan of people having things in private collections. And I get it. He thought things should be in museums, should be for public consumption. And I think about going back, museums wouldn't be where they were if someone didn't have a collection and then donate it. Like I think of J.P.
Theodore Morgan. Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt. And talk about the Smithsonian, Roosevelt. And you've got Morgan, who collected gems and minerals and then helped sort of create the American Museum of Natural History in New York. You've got someone like Thomas Jefferson, who collected books. And when the original Library of Congress burned down, said, "I'll give you my collection."
Right, here you go.
Really restarted that. Collections matter. And really one thing can lead to another thing. But personal collections are important. And they can still be used for research. And ultimately, they go out. We these are just items. We don't hold on to them forever. They make their way through. And I would say someone who collects is doing a service. And ultimately, that service gets passed along in knowledge and labor. I know as a set collector, my dad and I were set guys, you know, and there are hundreds of different types of ways to collect baseball cards. You've got rookie collectors and typeset collectors and you know, team sets. And we were set guys, and we built a few sets that had never been built before. And like one of a kind sets, Boston Garter, Joseph Hall cabinets from like the 1880s, 90s. And when we sold our collection, and when you see these things break out, it's almost like a part of your soul breaks. Like, oh, we worked so hard at putting that together. But ultimately, they're just items. And we realized as we sort of downsized and deaccessioned the collection that we can only hold on to them for so long. You know, I'm a Doctor Who guy. Sooner or later, this script is going to pass along. And if I don't have it, maybe the person who does doesn't take care of it. You never know. So I've always thought the things that I have, I've sort of have this, I need to shepherd it and protect it and write about it and say, these are important. I'm not a public museum. I don't have that luxury of having thousands of people come through here on a daily basis, but I can hold on to these items. And in 10 years from now, absolutely, when these things happen, they move on, I can sort of pass on that knowledge and, hey, that's never been built before. It may never be done again, but there are 14 in the set. There are 4 variations no one else knew about. There you go. People who don't collect, foreign to me, but I guess that's great. I would still say, do they collect memories? Do they collect, you know,
gotta be something,
moments? It doesn't have to be tangible. I mean, we're talking about meeting famous people or meeting people that matter to us. That's really cool. And I know at one point, I met Ernie Banks and Kobe Bryant, Kareem and Magic and Howie Long. I mean, legends. And I remember those moments more than anything. That's really cool. And when people ask me about that, they're not asking me about the shoes or something. They're asking me like, what was Kobe like? Or what's Magic like? And I'm like, Magic, you couldn't get Magic to leave your event. He would like, the agent would be pulling him out the door because he was so engaging and trying to have fun. Those are the things that matter as I've gone on, that I remember most. Like when we did these tours, like we would do the events here and people would come up to me years later and say, oh my gosh, Doug, you know, you don't even know how important that tour was. I brought my dad through and up till the day he passed, that was one of his favorite things, to hold a Babe Ruth bat or hold the Honus Wagner in his hand. Now that I look back, those moments matter more emotionally to me, is how we affected people. And I know when people say, Doug, you didn't know me, but your dad once gave me a tour to me and my brother. And those are the ones that hit me the most. Like, those are the things that really matter to me. And so those moments, more than the items, Like, I know, like, these Trout jerseys, I know which game they were. I remember, like, this Johnny Hecker jersey I have right here. That was from a Monday night game against the Bears this year where he put on the punting clinic. 5 punts inside the 10-yard line with special teams player of the year or the month or the week. And I remember watching that game, and everybody was so excited. It, like, had never been happened before. I remember watching that. So it comes up for auction, and I buy it. It's not expensive. But it means a lot more to me because I know that moment. That Gibson material, the bath, the jersey, the helmet, that is one of the real where were you moments. I can't tell you how many times people said, oh, I know right where I was when Kirk Gibson hit that home run. I was watching it on TV. I was in the game. You know, there are 50,000 people at the game, but it seems like 800,000 the way people talk, right? But it's a where were you moment. And how, think about it, you're the same age as I. How few really where were you moments are there in life? OJ, the Challenger, those kinds of things. So I explained this once to the Smithsonian when they did a show on it. We think about how few where were you moments there are in our life. Think about how few of those are positive, right? We think of generally where were you moments are negative. Kennedy, the space shuttle,
right,
OJ. Right. So then that narrows it down. Then how many of those can you actually hold in your hand? That is the true power of the Kirk Gibson bat. That moment united Southern California and really baseball. I mean, that's one of, when they do, you know, great moments in the World Series, the Gibson home runs usually top 10, top 5. That's a tangible thing, but that moment in time is what people remember, the story, and he comes up limping and everybody goes, oh yeah, when he did the pumping like my mom did. That's pretty damned powerful as a way of remembering history and the past, and that can unite people. And I think of you go to the New York City Comic Con, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's huge, right? I guess, you know, 100+ thousand people. All those people are there for one thing. I do the San Diego one, and I think Comic Cons are one of those places where everybody sort of fits in, right? And there are a lot of people who don't fit in here, there. There's rich and there's poor and there's, you know, different nationalities and gender, whatever. You go to Comic-Con, and everybody's there for the same reason. They're all there, and they don't really care about that. Models are talking to people who've had to work a year to buy the ticket and wait in line 4 hours. But they're there because they have that shared joy in something. And it's when you're talking Comic Guard, or you're talking to your military friends, I'm talking sports with my friends, those water cooler moments, or I mean, you remember Death of Superman, that whole huge comic thing.
Oh, God. That was ridiculous.
Those are huge. Like, but that's what people talk about. And so people, to go back to your question, people who don't collect, they probably collect memories and moments.
They got to be collecting something.
They
don't
have to classify them and organize them like we do.
Oh, we got to. I have a room with a steel door, mag lock, cedar walls with all my comics in them.
Yeah.
Like, you don't like, that's got a more secure wall than my actual freaking house does in that room.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get Sean Walchiff to jump on here. I told him, I said, we're talking Southern Cali sports. Try to get him to jump on. Those of you who've listened to the show, Sean is California Comfort Barbecue, Cali Comfort Barbecue, Southern California. Love the guy. He is one of those inspirations as this show is going on. I'll tell you, I hope you get a chance to talk to him. As Jeanette and Tim, for those of you who can't see Jeanette and Tim here, they're talking about who's getting to babysit me as the Telemardew is starting to flow a little better and a little better at each moment. Each one goes down a little bit smoother as we're going on here. And I agree with Jeanette. The positive memories of collecting. I got to meet one of my legends.
Okay.
Which was, but I got to ask you the one crazy collector question. And I never ran into this till I ran it. So as a comic book collector, you could damn near sign my book with lipstick as long as I know who's signing it.
Yeah.
And I really don't give two shits.
Yep.
I was at in 2009. It had to be 2009 because that's when I moved to Albany. The first ever Hall of Fame baseball game at Canton. Or not Canton, okay. Cooperstown.
Cooperstown.
Because it's right here in the Albany area.
Yep.
So, I mean, at that time, they had the oldest living pitcher was out there. He threw. There's all these legends out there that they could get out for the weekend. And I got to meet what could be one of the nicest people you would ever meet in your life, Brooks Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Brooks is like the Southern charm. He's trying. And I just wanted to meet him. And yeah. He signed the program that I have for it. But I remember these douche rags, and there's no other way to call them that,
mm-hmm.
that are standing there, and I heard this come out of one of their mouths. I hope he doesn't sign with his pen. He needs to use my special one. And it was a baseball bat, and it was going to get dropped into a tube. And this clown was going to turn around, and it meant nothing to him to see what is probably one of the greatest third basemen to ever play the game. I'm going to tell you right now, you did not want to send one up third baseline in the 70s and 80s Orioles when you had Brooks on third and Boog Powell on first. That was a bad plan. Yeah. It was not going to work out for you. And to watch this guy talk that way was the other side of collecting. And I think this is the other dark side that some of us hear about. Like, I have an original The Fight poster, Muhammad Ali and Frazier, The Fight poster from when it was broadcast on closed circuit TV. And this was from one of the gyms in Harlem.
Yep.
I've had this thing. Let's see. Tweety and I started working together probably in 2000 or 99, 2000. And he won it at an auction out of Seattle and paid $300 for it. And I bought it off of him for the same $300.
Sure.
It's been in the same tube since 2000 to 99, 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never taken it out, but the certificate's in there.
Yeah.
And I still remember even back then, first words out of my mouth, well, does it have a certificate of authenticity?
Yeah.
And but that's the other dark side of this world, folks. As we're going to kind of tie this up here with a bow in a moment, I love collecting, but be careful. Find a guy like Doug. Find a guy who's out there who does this, that has a passion, can go to his website. Now, can they buy stuff on the Collector's Connection?
They cannot. So what the Collection Connection does is it really talks to people about collecting, the power of it. I'm a former educator. We talked about this. I taught in Canton, Maryland, then Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm trying to teach people about the value of collecting and the history of collecting, the importance of collecting. The Collection Connection will also do consulting. I've had people that want to buy or build or sell collections. I've had a lot of experience doing that. I've sold massive amounts. I've built massive collections. It's a skill. It takes time. And if you don't do it on your terms, it will not end well. So I do a lot of consulting on that sense. I can coach. I can build roadmaps for collecting. If you want to build a book collection, you want to build, you know, a Hall of Fame. I have experience doing that. And there are people who have hired me to help them finish a 57 Tops set collection. They don't want to deal with auction houses. They don't want to deal with eBay. I have a lot of experience doing that. I can simplify that, and I know that language. It's that I know the language of auction houses. I know the contractual debates that they're going to have. And so I can simplify those things. I've given lectures to companies about how they can use collecting concepts to improve their sales, how they can teach their employees to cultivate collectors and improve, you know, day by day thing. One collection leads, one purchase leads to another one and leads to me telling another person to go there. And it builds up. A lot of it is about the connecting part of it, right? If you can connect to someone and find something to talk about, you've built that bridge, and that bridge then can lead you anywhere else. So it's really about how collecting matters and how it means something more than accumulating stuff. It's a connecting to a memory, a time, a place, a group, a thing that gives you peace, comfort, joy. For my dad, it was calming down and sort of separating out all the fancy business stuff. And I'm putting baseball cards in order. To, I enjoy meeting people. To me, collecting is so much more than things. It's memories. It's moments. That to me is what I'm trying to expound with the collection connection.
And then you have the other thing that's coming up is the DC.
DCD Collects. And so that is a series of eBay, Instagram discussions. I'll be doing a podcast soon talking collecting with people who collect. And it's going to be very similar to what we just talked about today. It's not so much the value of what you have. It's why do you collect that? What was the spark? What was the genesis of why you do that? What were the memories? What are the lessons you've learned? How would you tell someone who's new to that hobby? How would you get them involved? What's been your ups and downs? And I just really want to build on that. It's not about value. It's about the journey. It's about the time, the experience, and what you get out of it more than the flippers, the guy who's going to get the bat signed by Brooks Robinson, who was a gentleman, and Boog Powell, who not only was a gentleman, but made great barbecue, right? We remember Boog.
Yes.
Boog's barbecue out in the field.
For those of you that have never had a pit beef sandwich, barbecue in Maryland has a special twist to it. Yeah. And Tim, yes, a douchebag to Sean in Webster is an asshole. I just prefer douchebag. If you've never had a pit beef sandwich, just to kind of sidebar, hard left here, folks. We're going to go hard left. That is a top round roast that has been seasoned, cooked over an open pit on a spit, and then shaved down, preferably on rye bread, onto the sandwich with raw white onions and then horseradish and yellow mustard that you will eat to your glory. Look, you can't see it right now, but as the way I just described it, Doug shed a tear. I watched him wipe the tear away.
And so you used to go to Baltimore Oriole games and out behind the field.
The flag court.
There was his Boog's Corner, and you would buy barbecue, and he would be there more often than not talking to people. And so he was the kind of guy who just loved being around people. So I think of as many people who think of Boog Powell for baseball, there are as many people who Boog Powell is barbecue, and their dad's getting excited to meet this guy, and you're like, why is he important? But man, this food is good. That's really cool. And so to me, that's that memory of meeting people you grew up watching, right? You know, you're a Baltimore guy. And
Baltimore all day there, hon.
Maddie and Ripken and seeing, oh my God, I just blanked on his name. Who is the manager that yelled at everybody all the time?
Oh, Earl Weaver.
Earl Weaver, who had a pocket
drunken hot mess. That dude was a drunken hot mess. So that goes to, collecting to baseball urban legends.
Yeah,
I can remember. So I have an uncle. He passed away many, many moons ago. He was a Baltimore County detective, and urban legend was is like how these guys used to have to like all the time take Earl Weaver home because he was so shithouse drunk.
Yeah,
that like it would be like, let's pick up Earl. We'll take him home, and nobody needs to know about this. Because my man is all the way done.
Yeah.
He was done. But you know who – now, this will be one for you. As a Cali guy.
Yep.
Do you know who – for me, my favorite Oriole, and it's – you know, I love Rick Dempsey. I love Cal Ripken. I love Ben McDonald. I'll even accept Mike Mussina.
Yeah.
Sorry, son of a bitch. Should have been an Oriole when you went into the Hall of Fame. Not a Yankee, and your daddy was the only reason you went to the Yankees, and you all can stuff that in your hat, and I'll take that to the day I die. But moving on. See, now the Telemardu is working. Mike Devereaux. Oh,
of course. Yeah.
Loved Mike Devereaux. For those of you who don't know, Mike Devereaux was originally a Dodger. He was a rookie with the Dodger, came to Baltimore. He was an outfielder with Baltimore and was just not Oreo. I can't even say it. O-R-E-O, Oreo cookies, not Orioles. O-R-I-L-E-S. That's how I learned how to spell it as a kid. I can even sign it for you. But yeah, like I was a big Mike Devereaux fan.
Yeah.
Like loved Mike Devereaux.
Yeah. And it's so funny because you don't really even know why these guys are your fan. My favorite ball player as an Angels fan was a guy named Brian Downing. And Brian Downing was an outfielder, catcher, and he was like, he looked like Superman in terms he had the muscles and the haircut. And he was a big lumbering guy. And he played hard, and he used to run into Gary Pettis into the outfield all the time and get hurt. I just, for some reason, I mean, I love that. Bobby Gritch and Wally Joyner and Rod Carew and Claudel Washington. Those are the guys you grow up with, right?
And yeah, and I get it.
Big names on the Angels, Ryan and
Brady Carew. Anderson. Brady Anderson for me.
I remember when he hit the 50 home run. I mean, those are the guys that are sort of, for whatever reason, you connect with. And so someone would go, why do you collect Brady Anderson or Mike Devereaux? You go, that's just who I connect
with. That was my man.
Yeah, that was my guy. And so you're like, I'm an Angels guy, Mike Trout. I loved watching him. He was a homegrown kid, you know, drafted and signed. And the day, so my dad and I built this collection. That was one of the things we did together. We'd buy the jerseys. We have baseballs. So my father passed in December of 2018, and in 2000, you know, a little bit later, Mike Trout signed a contract for the Angels for another 10 or 12 years. I cried, like that moment of the guy that my dad and I followed is going to remain an Angel, and no one else would have ever had that thought.
Right,
but
right.
For me, it was like all this stuff, all these things we had built mattered. I have another story. So a couple years ago, the Rams played a Monday Night Football game against Kansas City. If you remember that game, it was the highest scoring game, Monday Night Football, 54-51. It was supposed to be in Mexico. They had a bad field. They moved it back to Los Angeles. And right before that game, we had just moved to Thousand Oaks, California, and there had just been a shooting, the borderline shooting, and then all of a sudden there were fires, really bad fires. So the Rams decided to auction off jerseys from the game, and one of the last things my dad and I bought together before he passed was the quarterback's jersey for the Rams, Jared Goff.
Yes,
you know, Goff, yep. That game. And it means so much to us because it was the last thing we bought together. Of course, Goff is now traded and is now a Detroit Lion, official today, actually.
Was it official? Oh.
It's official now. But I had this really weird response to that. Like, one, hey, you know, I'm a Rams fan. I think Stafford can do great things. And I actually had a real emotional moment when Goff left that, because I had this moment with my dad of clicking on the jersey and winning, and it arrived like a week or two before he passed. So I showed it to him in the hospital, and those memories mean so much. And so when he was traded, I'm sure everybody else was like, you know, thinking about it in terms of the team. Right. I had this real visceral response and that, like, wow, like the thing that really connected me to that and this and here got, you know, traded. How do I respond to that? Sometimes the things you're not even thinking about affect you through collecting as well. And it's just, it can be really powerful and visceral.
I love every bit of it. And I love to collect. I love the fact that your collection is something that's out there and people are going to be able to connect with you. We're going to get ready. We're going to tie this thing up and put a bow on it here, folks. It's time to turn the lights down at the bar here in a moment. But as I say that, if people want to find you, we definitely have the collection connection. We have the podcast. Do we know when the podcast is going to get out there?
You know, as soon as I can get it going, we're working on it now. We actually just created a Streamlab account and we got you know, we got equipment and we're making it happen. So we'll get there.
So will you let us know when it's happening? I'll make sure that I put it out there on the my page. We'll let everybody know about it. We'll share it. Definitely into the whole collecting. It's something I know I'll listen to. And yes, Jeanette, the closed caption probably has been embedding a little Telemar Do into it. Get over it. Don't help her out, Tim. So if you had a moment, you know, you wanted to tell somebody, hey, look, if you're looking to get into collecting or you have a young one that you want to get into a hobby like collecting, any quick advice that you would give them?
Be supportive. And you know, they may want to collect Pokemon cards and you don't maybe understand Pokemon cards. They may want to collect pencils or pens from hotels they travel to. It doesn't really matter. Don't focus so much on the worth of items. Just focus on why they're doing it and what they're getting out of it, and let them enjoy it, because you never know where one thing will lead you. I went from collecting baseball cards to running a museum and working with museums and creating exhibitions and narrative design. I would have never known that. I sit here with one of my friend because we were at a baseball card show together and we met through cards, and now we've gone in such random ways. You never know what's going to happen. Just be supportive and try to learn along with them.
And friend, share your experiences
in collecting too. Like, hey, I talk to your kids about what you did and why you did it, and just value the fact that it's more than items. It's so much more than items. It's moments and memories and experiences that they may not have otherwise.
That's awesome. Hey, friend, stick your head in the camera. We know you're out there. I heard you with your COVID cough and everything at the beginning of the show. Come here, friend. Your friend.
My friend?
Your friend.
Trevor,
your
come
friend.
Here.
Oh. Come here. Come here, friend, because you're involved in this. You're handing out items. Where are you at?
My friend, Trevor.
How's it going, Trevor? Guys?
There you go. I'm going to check the audio. It's my fault.
There's Trevor. Hey. Look, see, Trevor, you could have been welcome into this. Trevor, do you collect anything?
That's the understatement of the century. I have collected absolutely everything. That's why this guy is my best friend.
Yeah.
So again, everything he said, I've been listening to. Great podcast, and love it.
Man after my own heart, he collects everything. If you'd like, I'll send you my child support payments, and you can collect that too.
I collected those too.
See ya. You can't have everything. Where would you put it?
Oh, right? God. Look, and you have your Instagram, which is DC Collects.
DCD Collects.
DCD Collects. I've been tagging them all week long. Yep. Be sure to go follow them on Instagram. If you have any questions, Instagram, Facebook, please go ahead and follow his Facebook page. He needs as many followers as possible. This is a phenomenal thing. You're going to learn something. You're going to figure out how to collect. As always with our stuff, we've got our Instagram at Above the Bar Podcast. Make sure you go out and follow it. If you're listening to this on any of the things, and I got to thank, so I pulled my stats for the two listeners in Kenya. Thank you. For my listeners in Brazil, thank you. Netherlands, I know who you are. Someday you'll be on here on another live show. I love you. You were so much fun on the live show. All you folks, please listen to our live show. Come like the page. We are almost at 1,000 downloads.
Nice.
Which, for a guy who doesn't have a $1 billion backer like some of these shows do, I think that's pretty good. Make sure you check us out on Facebook, Instagram. If you want to send us a message on Twitter, it's at Above the Bar 4. Our email is theabovethebarpodcast@gmail.com. We have our parent network, which is the Earplug Network, where you can find The Daily Show with DW. You can find Random Shit, Random Guy, RSRG. Yeah, isn't it a great name? I love his name. We have Grindhouse. We have everybody on there. Make sure you go check out all those guys. Support everyone. We all need your love. If you're listening to this on Facebook, or excuse me, not on Facebook, but if you go on to Apple or any of those and listen to it, please make sure you give us a high rating and connect to us. The only way we get this thing moving forward, the only thing way other people know what you're enjoying, that's Apple's algorithm. More 5 stars, the more likes, the more higher they push it. You, my sir, get the final word. And what is that for tonight?
Talking to me?
Oh, you're my sir. Yes, that's you. That's you. You get to be my sir.
There's magic out there. There are amazing wonders. You just got to go look for them, find them, and learn from them.
Alrighty, folks, be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.